Before I get started about talking about leadership, I like to teach lessons. I believe life is about lessons. Lessons keep on coming until you learn them. Usually pain, setbacks, and failures, sometimes even successes, are indicators that you have a lesson to learn. And so I rejoice in my lessons and stories. So I have a lesson about lessons. And it comes from my own experience. I went to college, graduate schools, spent over $1 million on personal development. So I have banker's boxes full of notes. I think I pay about $1,200 a month to house banker's boxes of notes. And I'm sure within the context of the banker's boxes of notes, there's incredible lessons that are now worthless to me. And so when I speak in front of crowds, especially ones like this, an inner circle crowd, I like to teach a lesson about lessons. There's two types of people when it comes to lessons. There's those people that don't capture any of the lessons and think they're going to remember all of them. And then there's people that want to pay more for the lessons. They write down everything, put them into banker's boxes, and pay for storage for the same result, which is lessons that you can't remember. So the lesson I've learned about lessons, and I'm searching all the time for lessons because that's what gratitude is to me, the ability to find the light, the love, and the lessons in everything, is I only capture the lessons that resonate with me. There's so many lessons. You have so much content coming your way. Just make a habit of capturing the lessons that resonate with you. It's an intuitive awareness tool that God's given us to say, hey, this is important sometime in the future. Not right now. So if you're at the craps table and God tells you hard eight, it doesn't mean the next role is hard eight. I promise you. That's man-made constructive time. The infinite doesn't know man-made constructive time. So don't believe the idiot. I got a studio at the Wynn. Don't believe the idiot when you see him roll the hard eight goal. I knew it. No, he probably knew it 800 roles ago. And now he's saying that it came about. So capture the lessons that I teach that resonate most with you. Create a system, not banker's boxes in a storage facility, but a technological system that you can search those lessons when they are relevant to you. Your frequency is your neighborhood. And when you know something is aligned with your frequency, pay attention to it. Let time reveal why. Don't attach your emotions to understanding why it is. Logic and emotions are on different frequencies. They don't work together. That's why when you're worried and you tell yourself, let it go, let it go, let it go, you never let it go. So getting into my story, we're going to talk about my journey in the context of leadership. A leader is an intelligent follower. That's why these lessons are so important. The greatest leaders on earth are intelligent followers because they've learned all of these lessons and can reconcile them with human nature in order to inspire people with their inspiration. They can effectively communicate with people in various levels and raise their awareness, raise and bring out the best in them. An intelligent follower is three things. They're a great mentor. So they can give you instructions on where they are today. And I suggest all of you find mentors in your life, people who are sitting in a situation you want to be in, and ask them for directions. A great leader as an intelligent follower is also a great teacher. This, for me, is the most difficult of all, to explain the steps it was to make over $100 million, lose it all, and make it all back. It's difficult. I can tell you the steps I took, but I have a more difficult time as a leader, as an intelligent follower, explaining and teaching people those steps. And then finally, my favorite, which is a coach. Coach is simply someone that brings the best out of you. And that's what I want to do here today, is to bring the best out of you, to teach you the mindset, the heart set, the handset, to bring the most out of you, to enjoy the consistent every day, persistent without quit, pursuit of your potential. Your potential. You see, there's a huge energy crisis right now, and it's not because of what's going on in the Middle East. There's a huge energy crisis that exists between two things. I am, and this is what I want people to think I am. And if you're not paying attention to me, at least have your children pay attention to this, because it's a huge energy crisis between I am and what I want people to think I am. And I want you to understand that most people live their lives either like tubes, food in, food out, in a universe of nothingness. And when you live in nothingness, all you're worried about is what other people think, what's missing, and what you don't have. And when you pay attention and give intention to things like what other people think, what's missing, and what I don't have, that's exactly what you're going to get. And you're going to live your life in an energy crisis. You're going to search for that energy. You're going to tell people, I got to find my why. I got to find my why. I don't know what my why is, especially our kids. I don't know what my why is. Are you kidding me? You are. Apply your why. Let's figure out what you're doing to interfere with it. Because the premise of everything that I believe is that there's an infinite, abundant, unified system of thought, an omniscient, all-powerful source of energy that loves you, protects you, and promotes you more than your mom. Therefore, when the failure, setbacks, mistakes in your life comes about, you have an inspiration that you don't have a capability to know or understand how this is promoting or protecting you, which is what I had to work through when I lost everything. How could this be protecting me? I lost everything, over $100 million. How could this protect and promote me? Well, it started with my mindset. And the mindset that we want to have as leaders is an abundant mindset. And it's really difficult because we're afraid, inherently afraid. And when we're afraid, inherently afraid, we react to fear how? With ego, which separates us more, creates a greater energy crisis, accelerates us in the wrong trajectory. It doesn't allow us to know what we want. It pushes us towards what other people want or we think that they want or what's missing or what we don't have. What we want to be able to do is give meaning to our past when we're afraid that is aligned with the trajectory of where we want to be or better and utilize today in order to affect that alignment. And we have to have a mindset. So most people live their life like I did when I was young. You saw some pictures. I grew up with six kids, single mom. She worked two jobs, a second grade teacher. We came home, packed our dinner in a paper bag, and she filled up turnstiles with greeting cards at convenience stores just so we could eat. But I was super happy. I had the extraordinary siblings who ended up going to Harvard, Penn, Columbia, graduating summa cum laude, being these great people, this amazing mom. Some of you saw me earlier when I talk about my wife or my mom. I could hardly get it out because I am just so grateful that somehow these were the two most important people in my life. But there was times in this world that I wasn't happy, and it was always the same reason, financial. I caught my mom crying when the car broke down, when we didn't have enough food, when we couldn't afford summer camp. How are you going to send those kids to school? Whatever it was. And I said to myself, my mindset was, I'm living in a world of not enough. Not enough. I'm a victim. Why me? All these other kids think they're better than me because they have nice cars and a dad and all these things. Why me? And as I started to get older and graduated law school, I made my first $1 million 9 months out of law school. I transferred from this world of not enough and being a victim to being in a world of for me. Everything was for me. Have we heard that optimistic? You know, everything happens for me. And I bought into that all the time. And I bought into another thing. The more you give, the more you receive. Anybody believe that? Don't be afraid to raise your hand. I know all your moms. We all believe that. And it's true. But we're not told the entire story in the world of not enough or just enough about giving or receiving. And what happens is we actually still live in a world of scarcity. We start trading and negotiating everything in our lives. I call it a zero-sum game, a zero-sum game. When I give, I'm losing, and when they receive, they're gaining. Everything's a transaction, quid pro quo. There's some sort of zero-sum balance in the world that's going on. Well, that mindset creates scarcity, which, as we know, when you're looking in a world of scarcity, of not enough or just enough, you're going to get not enough or just enough. It's an amazing thing. And the reason it is that we're taught appreciation, gratitude. When you appreciate things, it adds value. It expands. The second step is acknowledgement. To acquire the knowledge of what you have to give it away. We've all seen those memes out there. The truth about acknowledgement is you acquire the knowledge or learn the lessons of what you have by not having it anymore. That's the only way you know exactly what you had. That's the only way you've learned the lessons of what you had, physically, spiritually, mentally, emotionally. You will never know what you have until you don't have it anymore. Therefore, you can give it away or you could have it lost, stolen, manipulated, or cheated from you. Acknowledgement occurs the same way, regardless how you don't have what you appreciated before. And so what happens in most people's lives, and this happened to my mom, she's 80 years old now, is that she appreciated everything that we had. She had value to her children, her community, to anything financially, assets that she had. It all appreciated. And then she gave it all away. She gave her health, her wealth, her worthiness. She did things that I saw a thing I had to call my mom. In 1974, did you know that's the first time that they allowed women to have credit cards? 1974. Before that, no woman could have a credit card. My mom had given her worthiness away for the future generations, my three daughters, her 16 granddaughters that she has, to create equity in very simple things that we may not appreciate today or even acknowledge. And so what happens is that if we appreciate what we have and we give it all away, slowly but surely, our capacity and our vessel depreciates, dissipates, and dissolves. And so we end up 80 years old, and we end up with the one thing we didn't want, which is needing help, because we never asked for it. We end up needing financial help, needing health help, needing all these things because of good intention, because we appreciate what we had and we acknowledged it and gave it away. And we wonder why our parents told us the more we give, the more we receive. When I'm 80 years old and I have nothing or very little, I've lost my health, my wealth, my worthiness. It's because we didn't ask for help. You see, if you want to live in a world of more than enough of everything for everyone, you have to have a mindset and a heart set that there's more than enough of everything for everyone. So if I ask for more than enough, a value add world, I'm actually adding value by asking. Does anybody feel good when you're asked for help? Everybody. Every single time, right? We feel good, but why do we deny that? Because of scarcity, because we live in a zero-sum game. We think that it's not humble. If we ask for help, somehow we're putting ourselves at a disadvantage or the other person at a disadvantage. But that's not how the world of more than enough works. If you have faith, there's more than enough of everything for everyone. If you have faith that there's an omniscient, all-knowing, all-powerful source of everything for everyone, then of course you're going to want to ask for help when you've created a bigger vessel for yourself to get greater acknowledgement in your life and then ask for more. They should teach kids today, the more you receive, the more you can give. And if you give for the right reasons, you'll be happy, right? Money doesn't buy love or happiness. It just allows you to shop. And if you shop for the right things for the right reasons, you'll be super happy, I promise. You'll be super happy. Or you could be like me, living in a world of just enough, buying things you don't need, buying different things you don't need, buying more things you don't need, thinking that will make you happy, to impress people, what, that you don't even like, because you're worried more about what they think you are than what you truly are. And we want to have a mindset and think in a confident, faithful world that there's more than enough for me. Therefore, I'm going to add value by finding the people that sit in a situation that I want to be in and asking for help. Two ways to get what you want. One, find someone that sits in the situation that you want to be in and ask them for help. Or two, find out what somebody else wants and help them get it. Those are the two ways you do it. So not only must you know your what under the context of more than enough, but you need to know your who you can help and who can help you. Your nothingness immediately, when you know what you want, not what other people want, not what's missing, not what you don't have, but when you know what you want, it's a possibility. When you find out who you can help or who can help you, it's a probability. Now it becomes your perspective when you act on it. And I have five steps that I've learned through my career as I lived in that world of just enough. I ended up running, being a millionaire 9 months out of law school in 1995. Ended up selling for $3.4 billion to Thomson Reuters. By the time I was 30, I was running Samsung, phone division. Might as well have been poor. Because I want more happiness, more health, more wealth, and more worthiness. Instead of I am happy, I am healthy, I am wealthy, I am worthy. What am I doing to interfere with it? And that's the mindset that we need to have in the world of more than enough. And so these five things have allowed me to thrive. How do we thrive as leaders? We build bigger communities. We empower others to be happy, to make more money, help more people, and have more fun. We change the world that way. I was upstairs earlier talking about my mission in life to empower over 1 billion people to be happy, to create a community of people that want to help each other and know people that can help each other is the best way to create and thrive in your life. Because if you help people and you know people that can help people and they help you and they know people that can help you, you're building a community that will last a lifetime and thrive for you with whatever you want to thrive. Could be your faith, your finance, your fitness, your whatever it is. Because you build a community of people that will buy from you and sell for you for life. Fastest, easiest, inexpensive way to create a legacy and to thrive is to build a community of people that buy from you and sell for you for life. And we're able to do that today at an unbelievable, amplified way by creating social silos of people that exist in our frequency. Our frequency is our neighborhood. So an example of that would be where I was born, Akron, Ohio. Anyone from Ohio? Oh, whoa. You're lucky. It's a great place to be from. That's awesome. So as I was in the projects in Akron, Ohio, if I still was there, and that was my frequency, I could sit two lawn chairs in the projects, drinking my Colt 45, turn to my friend, come up with some extraordinary idea like Uber, and explain it to my friend, and drinking his beer, he may say, that's a great idea. And there it lies. Where I live now, I can sit on a park bench in my gated community, looking over the Pacific Ocean, and some guy walk by, sit down next to me, tell him I have a great idea about Uber, and he'll say, hey, can I get in? Can I write you a $10 million check? That's a community of people that are aligned with where I want to be or better. And it's built with these five steps of thriving and understanding possibilities, probabilities, and perspective to allow me to prioritize my activities during the day. And so the first thing I want to do is stimulate interest. The first thing to thrive is I want to stimulate interest. And stimulating interest has two components. One is to understand that the idea of stimulating interest is literally just to get somebody to call you back. Chad talked about it, how we became friends. Think about this. Today, on average, you can ask 1,000 people for help minimum. It's so easy. All of you know, if I said, hey, every day we're going to ask 1,000 people for help, we have technological platforms that allow us to ask 1,000 people for help. And it doesn't even take that much time. Now, that's a first step in stimulating interest is to ask. There's four ways that we can ask to stimulate interest. One, in person. Two, on the phone, text or calls. Three, email. And four, media, traditional and social media. If you just practice each day one of these by stimulating interest, and I'm going to teach you how to stimulate interest, but if you just practice each day, that'd be 28 people a week, 112 people a month that you tried to stimulate interest with. That would change your business and your life. With whatever your mission was, what you want, not what other people want for you or you think that they want or you want them to think or what's missing or what you don't have. What you want. If all you wanted to do was raise money for the marathon and every day you were consistent asking in person on the phone via email and media, you would have 112 asks a month. Doesn't sound hard, does it? But the real variable in stimulating interest isn't just the consistency of asking, which is, by the way, right? Just like saying thank you, simple, easiest, fastest way to change your life is to say thank you before you go to bed and when you wake up. Takes 0.1 seconds, free. But if I asked all of you to do that, you'd be like me. By tonight, you would forget to say thank you. Or by tomorrow morning, you would forget to say thank you. Within 3 days, nobody's saying thank you anymore. But it's so simple. Here's a lesson for you. The simple things to do are unfortunately simple not to do. It's part of the problem with asking. It's so simple, we don't do it. But the real key to asking is learning how to get people to get back to you. Even if you just do one a day in each of the four different platforms, if nobody got back to you, it would have no impact at all. So we have to remember when we're asking, the real idea of asking is to stimulate interest so they get back to us. So we have a chance to step number two, which is transitioning that interest. So the first step of asking is what? Finding an open mind. Because we have such a huge audience, size, scope, and scale of an audience, you want to run away from a closed mind. Now, in my generation, you were taught to find the lowest hanging fruit, to make sure that you're utilizing all your time doing research to find the best person, because you only had so many at-bats. I used to stand with a roll of quarters in a phone booth in between my appointments, cold calling. And so I wanted to make sure if I could only get 10 calls in a day, that that person better be a qualified lead. Not true today at all. That's bullshit. Everybody is somebody, because you're building a community of people that what can help you or know people that can help you. And on average, people know thousands of people today and have access to thousands of people. It's not just your foursome or your card group or your church group anymore, or the yellow pages that, you know, we have to find the exact person. It's so simple. But people don't practice what? Getting people to call them back. I actually have a course on teaching people one simple thing, getting them to call them back. I say, look, just give me 10 minutes so you can ask four times a day, 112 times. And let's say in that, you get one person to call you back. And from that one person that calls you back a month, you're able to generate X amount of wealth. What if I taught you how to get two people to call you back? You would double your revenue, even if you didn't get better at selling. So if you aren't focused in on, because of the size, scope, and scale of the community you already have been given, to find an open mind, because open minds have open hearts and open hands, and run away from a closed mind, because it takes 1,000 times the energy to transition the interest of someone with a closed mind than an open mind. And so I'm constantly looking for open minds to increase my statistical success. And then I transition that interest. So how do we find an open mind? It's really simple. Look someone in the eyes and smile. You'll get a feel for whether they have an open mind or not. If you still can't get a feel, just make fun of them in some way. And if they laugh at you making fun of them, you know they have an open mind. If you don't like to make fun of people like I do, you know, I might look at your shirt and say, hey, did you buy that on sale? And if you smile at me, I know you have an open mind. Yes. Or you can just ask an open-ended question, right? Where are you from? What do you do today? That's how we start transitioning interest. So when we're practicing getting people to call us back to stimulate interest, and we're qualifying people with an open mind, the next thing is we want to transition their interest into what we want. So we ask open-ended questions about what we want. So if I'm a solar person, I may say, hey, do you know anything about solar? What do you like about it? Why do I ask what they like about it? Or I might ask what they don't like about it. Why do I ask that? Because people buy on emotion for logical reasons. The easiest and fastest way to get to someone's emotion is find out what they like and what they don't like. Also, it's the key to value. There's only two ways you can provide value to people. And we make it so complex. Trust me, I've been and have studied, it's in my banker's boxes, all the different sales systems, solution selling, spin selling, all the different ones. They're in my banker's boxes. But I've really come to a conclusion that if I stimulate interest of open minds, get people to call me back at an exponential rate, transition interest by finding out what they like and don't like about what I want, then I can provide value in two ways. Give people more of what they want, or take away what they don't like or part of what they don't like. That's where value is derived. You don't have to make this so complex, because we have millions of people that are accessible to us. Out of those millions of people have open minds. Oh, one other rule about open minds is everyone has an open mind, because people like me and Chad, we have super open minds. So we have all kinds of options, opportunities, and touches of favor. So when people ask us if we're interested, we truly are. But now we have to prioritize all the different options, opportunities, and touches of favor, because we're limited by 24 hours in a day that we're almost guaranteed every day. And so if you can find someone that has a closed mind the majority of the time, catch them when they have an open mind by asking. You're going to be so much more statistically successful, because they have no other options but what you're presenting to them. Because most of the people that I've talked to them, they've had a closed mind too, so they have no options listed. You just got lucky and got them when they had an open mind. And that's why it's so important to ask. asking just consistently is so important. I did some consulting work for Home Depot for Arthur Blank. He owns the Atlanta Falcons and one of my mentors, incredible guy. So they have four different types of checkouts at Home Depot. They have the garden, the consumer, the contractor, and the automatic checkout. And they started to sell warranties like Best Buy, huge margins in warranties, right? Buy your appliance, 3-year, 5-year, pay me all this money for your warranty and we'll help you kind of when whatever they do, right? We all know how that works. One of those checkouts sold three times as the other three combined. Do you know which one it was? Which one? No, automatic. Do you know why? Because the automatic checkout asked every time. It didn't look at you and say, you can't afford it. You're too pretty. You're in bad mood today. Oh, you're way too happy and you have 6 kids, right? You look rich. You look poor. This is what we do. And we don't ask. We're not consistent about it. Not the automatic checkout. You scan it. It's like, hey, want a warranty? They don't care what height you are, what color you are, how rich, poor, mean, sad. It just says, hey, 3 times as much. If that doesn't convince you how important it is to stimulate interest, get people to call you back and transition the interest by finding out what they like, don't like, and then provide value by articulating the quantitative value of giving them more of what they like and taking away what they don't like. Let me repeat that because it goes and slips by people, this fifth step of being an intelligent follower, of being a great leader. And I'm not just talking about sales. I'm talking about ideas and values and practices and execution models and incentives. What do you like? What don't you like? Knowing it and then providing them more or giving them less of this. But the most important component, just like getting people to call us back will exponentially create success in your life, is being able to articulate that value. How many times has someone tried to share a vision with you and they've spent their life in this vision, a lifetime in this vision, whatever it may be? I want to empower over 1 billion people to be happy. And then they can't articulate the value of it. They haven't practiced explaining. They just assume, hey, you know how I'm going to do that, don't you? I'm going to empower over 1 billion people to be happy. Do you want to join me? Well, who's this nut? Right? It wasn't until I told people that I'm going to go every single day to as many people as I can, big podcasts, small podcasts, big TV shows, small TV shows, big audiences, small audiences. And I'm going to find 1,000 people like Chad, who I am going to empower another 1,000 people like Chad, to empower another 1,000 people. To learn how to make money, help people, and have fun. To have the mindset, heartset, and handset to live in the world of more than enough. Because I know people that ask, stimulate interest, transition interest, and share a vision of more than enough get more than enough. Those that do just enough get just enough, and those who do not enough get not enough. That's how I lost everything. Because regardless of having over $100 million and running the most notable sports agency in the world. They made the movie Jerry Maguire about my firm. I had everyone from Troy Aikman, Steve Young, Warren Moon, Lennox Lewis, Evander Holyfield, every single boxer, baseball player, Sabathia Ramirez, all of these guys. I had millions and millions of dollars and access that billionaires couldn't afford, but I lived in the world of just enough. And guess what? That's what I always got, just enough. But when I started to practice articulating the value, to understand what that value was to other people. Either I could give them more of what they wanted or take away what they didn't want and articulate the quantitative value of that to exceed what I was asking for, it became a no-brainer. Anybody have $20? Come on up here. Can I give you this $100 bill for that $20 bill?
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I appreciate it. Have a seat. Yes, you're welcome. There it is. That's how I live my life. I live my life in abundance. That's the simplest way that I articulate value. Would you like $100 or $20? There's perceived value and real value. Perceived value is your level of comfort to explain the value of what you're giving or selling. And real value is what you receive. I had a friend, he was a wholesaler from the Middle East. Everything he bought was 90% off, And then he gave it away as perceived value. And if you asked him, oh my gosh, you gave me that Armani, you know, blah, blah, you know, meanwhile, I got it 90% off. You gave me that TV 90% off. What can I give you? Gold. I'm not lying. He would tell everyone, birthdays, holidays, what do you want? Gold coins. He was a real value guy. Easy to articulate the real value of gold. You just look it up. But perceived value allows you to create a margin in your life because it relies on the fact that you can articulate the quantitative value to exceed what you're asking for. And perceived value is only indicated by your comfort level of asking and articulating it. It's really great in the speaking world. It is, because there's no difference. You know, I make six-figure speaking, especially international. I won't go unless it's six figures. Is my speech worth more in Malta than it is here? No, it's just the comfort level that I have in articulating the value when I speak to exceed what I'm asking for, combined with my bottom line. If you want some great pragmatic handset advice today to be a leader, always know whether it's your ideas, solutions, services, or products that you're leading with, whatever it is, know your perceived value, which is your comfort level of articulating the quantitative value to exceed what you're asking for, but also know your bottom line. Also know your bottom line before you get into stimulating interest, transitioning interest, or sharing that vision of providing more value of what they like by giving them more of what they like or taking away some of what they don't like. Know your perceived value and bottom line. If you have children, know your perceived value and your bottom line and always stick to your bottom line. Walk away if they go below your bottom line. If you want to thrive in your life, you have to find the open minds, open hearts, and open hands and get those people to call you back. You need to transition interest by being more interested than interesting and asking what they like and don't like about your vision. And then articulating the value by giving them more of what they like or taking away what they don't like to exceed what you're asking for by knowing your comfort level of asking and also your bottom line. Now, when we get that shared vision, there's a fourth step. Most people, if I asked, okay, when we share a vision, when someone says, yes, I'm all in. Yes, Chad, you can come on my podcast. Yes, you can interview me. They would say, oh, I'm 80% of the way there. But Chad articulated it best, right? Most of the time, when someone shares a vision with you, you're 20% of the way there. You're 20% of the way there, whether you're a leader as an intelligent follower or just a dictator, someone who has just poured features and benefits into somebody, oversold, back-end sold, lied, manipulated, or cheated them. Or a leader is to manage and develop expectations. And the best way, handset-wise, to do that is to create a go-no-go plan of any type, to get an agreement not only on the shared vision, but to come to agreement on how we are going to what? Execute on that agreement. So I create a go-no-go plan. I will call you on Thursday, and this was going to happen. At that time, you're going to tell me go or no-go. Because I'm utilizing a go-no-go plan to manage and develop the vision, which is 80% of the work, which creates 100% of the success, I have to have a go-no-go rule. And this is going to save you more money, more time, more emotion, and more value than anything else I'm going to teach you in a pragmatic way if you have a leader's mindset of being an intelligent follower of open minds, open hearts, and open hands. Once we have a go-no-go plan, if someone does not act or align with what we agreed upon, that's called a no. Now, I use universal no. So if in our go-no-go plan, the first step is I am going to call you Friday to review the shared vision to get to a contract a week from now or whatever the rest of the go-no-go plan is. If I call you on Friday and you don't answer, that's a no. If I forget to call you on Friday, that's a no. If I get a flat tire, my phone runs out of battery, my wife is screaming at me so I can't call you, that's a no. If I tell you no, that's a no. But I will tell you, because you remember, everyone has an open mind. It's just a matter of time. And people have a closed mind now, or you receive a no and the universe is giving you resistance. We know that it's a matter of time. It's not a matter of mind. It's a matter of time, not mine. So when I get the first no, I try back again. And if I get a second no, flat tire, dead battery, a no from them again, nobody answers, I forget to call, you name it. I know it's just a matter of time, but I also know that I have to prioritize open minds and that some people don't have an open mind most of the time, and I may be statistically more successful at some time stop calling. On the third time, if I get a no, I simply leave a message. This obviously is not the right time. When it is, call me back. Two things happen. Approximately 50% of the time, I'm not a big statistics guy. The only statistic I really love, well, two statistics I love. One, 100% of the things you do now get done. That's a really good one. 100% of the things you do now get done. The other one is 99% of all statistics are made up. So I'm not a big fan of statistics. But 50% of the time, if you get three no's and you tell someone this, even though we shared this vision and you said, yes, Chad, you can come on my podcast. I can come on your podcast. And he gets three no's. He just leaves a message. Dave, obviously this isn't the right time. Call me when it is. 50% of the time, he will accelerate the sales cycle or the shared vision. And I will call him back and he'll see that it was just circumstantial. The other 50% of the time, I'm a chicken shit and I'm too afraid to tell Chad he's not coming on my podcast. Both ways you win. In fact, I think you win more considering the size, scope, and scale of the audience and how we five to thrive to build a community of people that are going to buy for us, from us, and sell for us. How big the community that we can build at our frequency of people that are going to help us and know people that can help us, that we provide value to exceed what we're asking for. This whole game revolves around the fact that you want to utilize your time to build this community for a lifetime. The people that say no and never call you back are creating so much value for you because there's so many other people with open minds that you can stimulate interest, transition interest, and share a vision. And the more you stimulate interest and the better practice you are at getting people to call you back, the more practice you are at transitioning interest. Even if you don't get better at sales, you will just because of the repetitions. Managing and developing a vision is just understanding what is your go, no, go plan and getting agreement to it and then adhering to it by notating the three no rule and letting them know on the third no, this obviously isn't the right time. Call me back when it is. That's all. How many of us have used our ego to waste all our time, emotion, relationships, and value and wondering in all that fear, should I call them? When should I call them? Should I call them back again? Oh, I will call them. This is the 150th time in the last 6 years I've called them. Instead of thinking, hey, three times is enough. This person has an open mind some of the time. Let me give him an option when he does have an open mind to call me back or not. It's that simple. And it works within ourselves. Your mission is to build a community, a neighborhood, a frequency, a vibration of people who want to help each other and know people that can help each other, who will buy from you and sell for you. And there's the fifth step. If you have a community of people for a lifetime that will buy from you and sell for you for a lifetime, you will thrive. All the greatest companies in the world have people that buy from them and sell for them. Some of you may be old enough to know what a BlackBerry 967 pager was and an IBM ThinkPad. I was a diehard ThinkPad guy. And I remember sitting in first class next to this clown with a Macintosh, and I'm opening up my computer and it had like 16 viruses, and I waited half the flight for it to figure out and boot up. And he just opened up his Mac and started to work. And I leaned over after like an hour of booting up and my battery's dying as quick as possible because the processor is running like this, right? And I'm like, man, I wish they had Excel, PowerPoint, and Word on that thing. And he said, oh, it does. I was like, no, that's for artists and teachers. That's not for business people like myself. I run a really big business. I can't afford to have that art machine. He goes, no. Do you know how much time this saves me? Look, close, open, close, on, off. The battery's twice as long. It's smaller. It's lighter. He's selling for who? Right? He's selling for jobs. It was amazing. And what did I do? I went out and bought my first Macintosh, and then I bought an iPhone. I was freaking CEO of Samsung's phone division in 1999. Google it, called the PCE phone. I bought more iPhones. I have four kids. I got big business. Everybody has an iPhone. I can't remember the last time I bought a Samsung. And worse than me paying millions of dollars for a bunch of Apple products, I've sold millions of dollars of Apple products when the AirPods came out as the first one to get them and sell every one of my friends and probably selling right now on stage for them. Why? Because Steve Jobs knew that if I stimulated interest, transitioned interest, shared a vision, managed and developed that vision, that I would create a community of people that would buy from me and sell for me for life. That's why that company is so great. Whether it's your ideas, your product, services, or solutions, you and I all have a capability of building a community, a neighborhood, a frequency of people that want to help each other, know people that can help each other. It takes that mindset of more than enough. I am more than enough. I don't need more. I'm not searching for my why. I'm applying my why. I'm part of something bigger than me that loves me more than my mom and knows everything. I'm going to ask for more than enough so I can give more than enough. I'm going to add value at all times instead of play a transactional game of zero sum all the time. I'm going to identify that fear and react with abundance by stimulating interest, transitioning interests, sharing a vision, managing and developing it, and thriving in my life, building more and more of a community by asking in person, on the phone, via email, and media for what I want so I can give others what they want. And I promise you, if you do that, you will have more than enough. There's more than enough for everyone of everything. You just have to ask for it. Stop asking for not enough. Stop asking for just enough. Ask for more than enough and give away more than enough and then ask for even more. You will never overachieve your own self-image. Every belief you have, if you believe in more than enough, every belief you have beyond the infinite is a limiting belief. If you truly believe in more than enough, if you believe in the infinite, every belief you have is limiting. Let's break through that limit. Let's think about more, and we need to ask for more in order to give more. The more you receive, the more you will give. Give for the right reasons and the right things. I promise you, you will make more money, help more people, and have more fun. You will live in abundance. And if you do that, I promise you, you will be happy. And if you're happy, that'll make me happy. Thank you very much.